the Rule of Threes Podcast. The Rule of Threes Podcast. It's the Rule of Threes Podcast. With Chris and Casey.
It's the Rule of Threes Podcast. I'm Chris Grace.
Casey Lawrence.
It's Monday, March 30th, 2020. And we are still remote. We are FaceTiming. We have cats on a Zoom meeting passing in front of the camera.
That's right. It is very, very close to Spencer's dinner time. So he is.
Oh, how many times a day do you feed that cat?
Two times a day.
And how much do you feed?
One can of cat food per time.
How big is that can?
The can is, I believe, 8 ounces, something like that. It looks like a standard Trader Joe's can size.
Is it like a tuna fish can?
It is like a tuna fish can.
Okay. Twice a day. Because our cats, we have moved to a wet food diet. And they're doing much better, but they're constantly hungry.
Yes. So he gets hungry before his food times. But he's also, he's a pretty big cat.
Yeah.
He's like 15 pounds. So we feed him twice a day. We used to feed him 3/4 of a can.
Yeah.
But I like looked at the can and it was like, for every 7 pounds, feed one can a day. And I was like, well, he's 15 pounds. We'll feed him 2 cans a day.
Okay.
And he is always the hungriest cat. The funny thing is that recently, since we started feeding him one can per meal, he has been leaving just a little bit. Normally, he'd like eat everything. He'd go to eat the other cat's food. And now he's like, I think we finally got him to the point where he's not like, oh my God, I'm dying of hunger. I am eating a normal and good cat amount.
Hmm.
This is all new to me. I'm a new cat guy, and he's now currently freaking out on the floor. So much fun cat stuff.
You are mostly a dog person.
I guess I'm mostly a dog person, but these two cats, ever since I moved in with my my girlfriend, holy moly, they're great. These cats, and they have been very helpful during the quarantine.
Oh,
because you know, they're real snuggly. They're like fun, cuddly cats, which is way different than all the cats I've ever had.
A lot of people are out there fostering or adopting dogs at the moment. Dogs are not, pets in general are not really subject to the virus, and I feel like there's a lot of shelters that are like, come adopt a pet now.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be alone for 3 months.
Yeah. Do you remember back when there was that viral tweet that many different people copied that said, according to the World Health Organization, the coronavirus doesn't affect dogs. So
yes.
What you heard is that who let the dogs out? And you remember when stuff like that was funny?
From a week ago?
Yeah. When it was like, oh yeah, that's a fun joke. Yeah. And then now it's just not funny anymore.
I do remember that. So we are, this is our first sort of like fully into the quarantine podcast. I imagine most of our listeners at this point are in some sort of social distancing. Unless you live, I guess, in Florida or something.
And even if you live in Florida, please, as listeners of this podcast, do your part and do some social distancing, which is to say directly, leave your house once a week for groceries and that's it.
Yeah. Let's talk about Tiger King briefly.
Okay. Yes.
Because I mentioned that we had to start a little bit late because we're in the middle of an episode of. We've watched 3 episodes of Tiger King now.
Oh, Lord. You are very into it.
Have you seen any of it? All of it?
I've seen all of it.
So I don't actually want to talk that much about the details because I think the fun of it is not knowing much about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a roller coaster ride.
I must say that
I'm
increasingly frustrated by people on Facebook just unable to not post details about the show when they talk about it.
That to me sounds very, very frustrating, which is why I had to watch it from start to finish, basically, over the course of a day and a half.
People literally just can't say, to me, the appeal is not knowing what's coming and being like, whoa, that was out of the blue. And so, I don't know, it's just very, seems very not self-centered, but like, your world is the only thing that matters because nobody wants to be spoiled by details from the show. But then once they've watched the show, they're like, well, everybody must have seen it by this point. So now I can talk about it.
Yeah. When in the truth of the matter is that the only people who've seen it are people who, care so much about spoilers that they will change everything about their life so that they can watch one episode or one full season of the show until it's done.
Yeah. Like,
and you're probably taking your time, right? You're going to watch an episode.
We watch one or two a day.
See, that's nice. It's really nice to like take the time and be like, ah, you know what? I'm processing this. I watched it so fast. It was like over. And I was like, what the fuck just happened?
And also it's only like a week old. So like for people to be like, you know, well, you should have watched it by now. It's like, well, no. And also, I'm not done with McMillions, which, you know, I was all excited about McMillions, and now Tiger King makes McMillions look like a Sunday talk show or something.
Yes. And to me, I think the thing about Tiger King that is most surprising to me is how much they leave out.
Ah, interesting.
Right? It feels to me like there's so much more there, but they made it in such a way where it leaves out so much of the things that could have gone in there.
I'm interested by how much access they had to, how much footage they have of stuff.
What person besides Joe Exotic do you think would ever allow someone to document their life, their incredibly strange and, you know, illegal life in mm-hmm. such a way? I mean, it's out of control. Like if I was a drug lord, I would not be like, just get the documentary crew up in here and we'll make this happen.
I would recommend the documentary, The Staircase as well. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Oh, you got to see that. That's the modern king of this kind of documentary. Wow. The Staircase. It's about a trial in North Carolina, and basically,
is that on Netflix or something as well?
And it might be on Amazon Prime.
Okay. I feel like I've seen it recommended to me. It's a series somewhere. Of things, yeah. Right?
It is basically, imagine if somebody was accused of a crime and immediately after being charged, they gave the defense team gave a documentary crew full access to all of the defense side of it. Wow. So from the moment they are charged, there's a documentary crew in there filming everything. And that is an amazing, and I would say was sort of I am fascinated by how these things come in waves, because The Staircase is probably like 15 years old and was an incredible series where there's like three or four episodes in a row that end with you going like, oh my God, I cannot believe that.
Yeah.
And then we've had like a trickle of these kind of shows since then. We've had The Jinx. We've had, I'm trying to think of other ones that have come along in the way. But now I would say in the last 18 months, we've just got a string of documentaries in a row that are just like, you got to see this one. I was trying to think of the name of the one where it was the parents who like let their child go with this guy that he like kidnapped her.
Yes, I watched that one.
And then he did it again or something?
Yes, they let her go, I think, three times.
And then there's Wild Wild Country and all this
stuff. Oh, my gosh. So, you know, ostensibly we're comedians. Does the comedy documentary appeal to you? Like, you know, the Documentary Now series, Spinal Tap, that kind of thing.
Spinal Tap does. Documentary Now, I've watched some. I admire Documentary Now for their accuracy, but most of the time I'm just like, I'll just watch the original one. Like their Grey Gardens parody and their parody of the cast recording of Company. They're like, they're fine, but they almost function more as a like, hey, we watched that thing too that you watched.
Yes.
Because if you haven't seen Grey Gardens, you should watch Grey Gardens. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, because it's almost beyond parody, a lot of these things. Yeah. Are. Like to parody them is kind of a futile exercise.
There's nothing that can be crazier than what happens in Grey Gardens in that context, you know? So, like, there's something about the banality of how crazy, and this is true for Tiger King too, how there'll just be things where you're like, it's more just like, I wasn't a, it's fascinating to see like, these are human beings and their sense of what is appropriate in one situation, even the minor things that are not illegal or, you know, whatever. Even there's an interview we're watching today in the third episode of a guy who's a tangential part of the story. And just the way his house is decorated, I was like, what's going on with this guy's house? Like there's just things like that, these are different worlds.
Every single person in that show that was interviewed was so foreign to me as a person.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, I mean, I truly don't get it in a way that, you know, I mean, normally documentaries and, you know, this kind of stuff is supposed to humanize folks like this. Mm-hmm. And I did not feel like anybody here was humanized. Like their desires and their wants and their needs did not become apparent to me even after watching this television show.
I think that's true, and I think one of the things that's kind of fascinating about it is the alien nature of just encounter. It's really like we're encountering like a separate planet of human beings that just ended up with a totally different moral code than ours. Okay, go watch Tiger King. It's amazing. But more importantly, we watched a different movie this week.
We did watch a different movie this week.
This was a movie you had not seen before.
I hadn't seen this movie before.
And I was excited for you to see it.
And I got a review for you.
Uh-oh. White Man Can't Jump was the movie we watched this week. I watched it again Friday night.
Yeah. Here's my first part of the review. First part of the review is that I didn't realize until after we had decided to do it that this is exactly what the starters, now free agency or whatever they're name is now that they're on The Athletic. No Dunks is what they're called now. They're doing this, and their first movie that they picked was White Man Can't Jump.
Okay, well,
which was pretty funny. So we're going to make that happen in a different way.
Sounds like Casey Lawrence was not a fan of White Man Can't Jump.
Incorrect. I was a huge fan of this.
Oh, okay.
I love
the way you set it up. I was like, yeah, I got, oh boy, I got a review for you.
I did that on purpose.
Oh, I genuinely, I was about to go into the mode of like, well, you know, not everything.
No, this movie was so good. And like, yes, there's some, you know, outdated, kind of like, racial relations stuff, but some of that stuff isn't even outdated because, like, people still interact like that. It's may not be like PC to do in culture, but like, you know, I mean, you talk about like the way they interact, the way that Leon and Larry interact on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. And Larry's a reprehensible idiot on Curb.
Right.
But like there are people who aren't blunt or sorry, are blunt about race relations in America.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may not be how everyone can act, but it's still a fun thing to look at and talk about.
I agree with you. I do think that if we extrapolate like the way they talk about white people and black people in this to be statements about society in general, they're dated. We're also talking about a movie about basketball where the sort of central lens of it is through a white guy, even up to the title. But I think people still talk that way in basketball on the basketball court for sure. I bet the locker rooms of NBA, every NBA team has conversations similar to this.
Yeah. I mean, you get young guys who adore this movie, like what's his face from the dunk contest this year? He did a White Men Can't Jump dunk.
Oh, I think I missed that.
Is
he a white guy?
He is a white guy.
Ah.
He was the guy, Pat Connaughton from the Bucks.
Oh,
he
right.
dressed up like Woody Harrelson's character in the movie.
And did he have the explicit shirt on?
No, it was like from, he had a different like surf style shirt on. He should have had the explicit shirt on.
He dressed like a chump, as they would say.
Like a chump.
You know, I didn't realize, I mean, I knew this was set in Los Angeles or really there's a lot of it in like Venice or whatever, but like when I saw this as like, you know, in high school or junior high or whatever, I wasn't aware of like Los Angeles in that way.
Oh right? Yeah.
So it's very different watching it now. Because it feels like this happens with every movie set in Los Angeles. I keep wondering like where that intersection is or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of this is in Venice. A lot of this is in, I guess they go to Watts at one point.
they do go to Watts.
Watts is, I mean, that's what's, so like, that is a scene that, if I described it to people who haven't seen the movie, it's potentially problematic. They go to Watts, and there's a scene where the guy pulls the gun out and stuff, like, but it is a very funny scene, I will say.
No, that was the Crenshaw scene. That was Watts yet. Watts was the one where he got off the bus and they lost.
Okay. Yes.
Right. With Crenshaw, with the big money game.
Crenshaw was like where the guy second stage, like hustle.
Correct. Yeah. And that was where they hustled the guy who went to rob the corner store, right. Got recognized, sold the gun, and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is a very funny scene.
Very funny.
When scene. He goes to rob and the guy's like, is that you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think to me, the thing that was so interesting about this, like the locations in this movie, is how much better it was back before Snapchat took over Venice.
Oh,
you know, and before like Silicon Beach popped up and all that bullshit, because like the Venice Boardwalk, that's where Snapchat headquarters are.
Oh boy.
Right. A lot of those like places that were like, you know, dingy shirt shops or, you know, Venice used to be like kind of a dingy, dinky place.
Right.
And now it's, you know, it's Santa Monica South. Like people have tried to keep Venice weird for a long, long time. And it just, it didn't work because of tech and like the gentrification in Venice is mm-hmm. incredibly real. And, you know, that's one of the themes of this movie is, you know, they're trying to, both of these people are trying to like move their way up into the world. But you know, how are they going to get there? Like what do you need to do to move your way up in the world? And what does it mean to move your way up in the world?
Yeah. So Woody Harrelson plays Billy Hoyle.
Uh-huh.
Wesley Snipes, what was the name of his guy? Sidney Dean. And I forgot, I mean, it's very apparent if you think about this movie, but I forgot that I just love like hustle movies, con man movies and you know, like the Sting and all that kind of stuff. And it has that element to it, you know, the betting element. Like I don't know if you've seen Color of Money, but I love Color of Money.
Like the episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where Will goes to the pool hall.
Ah. And hustles.
And he gets hustled. No, he gets hustled.
Uh-huh.
But then he has Uncle Phil come and save him because he learns that Uncle Phil was actually very good at pool.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's got that hustle vibe to it, which I love. And so tell me what you thought of the basketball in this.
I thought the basketball was fine. I mean, I don't expect basketball movies are going to be like 100% accurate, but I felt like they played well, and it was pretty obvious that Wesley Snipes learned how to dribble for this movie.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that he did, like he Woody Harrelson's a better basketball player than he is, and that Wesley Snipes is just a natural athlete and was able to pick up what he needed to play the, because he does dribble in a really weird way.
Just such an actor way to dribble, just like you're really pounding the ball hard in a way that seemed like it was for effect.
So that's true. However, a testament to his athletic skill is that he was doing like things that are like pretty advanced. So it's almost like somebody quickly learned how to play basketball well, but didn't go through like years of it where they developed like imitating other basketball players. It was almost like, because there's physical skills that he does in the movie that are hard. Like it's like someone just really talented being like, I guess I can do something like that, and I will do it. He doesn't look like I don't, we probably won't put this on our list, but in the Basketball Diaries, Leonardo DiCaprio like passes the ball between his legs at one point, and it's just like, ugh, that doesn't look right at all. whereas Wesley Snipes does a couple, like, he puts the ball around his back like twice for no reason at one point. They do a lot of complicating an open layup for no reason at the last minute.
It's actually a plot point in the movie is that, you know, Billy Hoyt doesn't want to dunk it, you know, and he's like, you know, instead of complicating this whole thing, you just dunk it.
Right. And then Sydney's, even in some of the, there's a couple moments where it's like, Sydney, why are you passing it out to me to shoot a jumper? This was one of the first movies I saw where somebody did a pass off the backboard to somebody else. I believe Woody Harrelson did play some high school basketball or whatever, which I think is also, you can see because he just has a more fundamental and less flashy game. But
you know what tipped me off to that?
What?
It's that his shot, his form is weird.
Woody Harrelson's form?
Yes, his form is weird. And to me, that shows that that's somebody who actually plays basketball.
I see.
Because if he had like learned real quick, he would have had perfect form but missed a whole bunch.
He would have had a coach.
Yeah.
That, and then they would just take the ones that he made.
instead of that, he just like already knew how to shoot a basketball a way that felt comfortable for him.
Right.
Because that's the deal with everybody. Everybody has their own like specific way that they shoot a basketball.
Right.
And his wasn't like pretty. It was just like, this is how I shoot a basketball.
Right. I will say that near the end of the movie, they talk the whole movie about these two legends that are, hustling or used to hustle. That are
human MacGuffins.
But then the guys show up for the last big thing.
And they're just two dudes.
They're just two dudes. However, one of them is played by Freeman Williams, who was an NBA player.
Oh.
He played Duck.
Okay.
I don't know. Duck Johnson and the King, maybe, were the two. Ooh. I don't remember. Anyway, Freeman Williams played from 1978 to 1986 in the league.
Oh. And
For like 79 to 80, he averaged 18.6 points a game for the San Diego Clippers.
So the one season the Clippers were in San Diego, basically.
He was with them for three. It says SDC for like three or four seasons here.
Okay.
But 18.6 points a game. And then the next year, 19.3 points a game. So this guy was like, he could score. And if you go on YouTube and look for Freeman Williams, you can actually find some like highlights of him in the league.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, that's fun. And then the guy who played Raymond, the guy who tried to rob the place, I believe also, his name is Marquez Johnson. And I think he was maybe, he was the, let me just make sure that it's the same guy. Media career. Yes, he was. He was the third pick in the 1977 NBA draft.
Whoa.
By the Milwaukee Bucks.
And that's great. I mean, in back then, they had like seven rounds of the NBA draft.
Did they really?
Yeah. I mean, I forget when they rearranged it, but the NBA draft used to have a ton more rounds.
So they actually had like a Mr. Irrelevant, basically.
Yeah.
He played from 1977 to 1990. He played his first like 7 years with Milwaukee. And I mean, this guy, we should actually try to find highlights of this guy, Marquez Johnson, because his rookie year, he played 80 games. He averaged 19.5 points a game and 10.6 rebounds a game rookie year. And basically held up like a 20 and like 7 or 8 rebounds a game average for his entire Milwaukee career, which is like 8 years. Well, so like that's a pretty significant
that career. Is. That is pretty significant.
Actually, 1, 2, 3, 4. He was all-star 5 times. If that's what this little star next to his season means.
It does. Yeah.
So it's amazing to me. I mean, he ended his career in 1990, which is like a while ago. It's 30 years ago, but not like beyond recorded history. And I don't think it's weird to me that a 5-time All-Star, we're just kind of like, oh, yeah, he was in White Man Can Jump. Like, we weren't like, oh, my God, that's Marquez Johnson as that guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably just having to do with the fact that he retired before I was thinking about basketball.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for me in particular, but, I'm sure when this movie came out, people were like, oh, it's actually got real basketball players.
It probably does, but like, I think I saw this in the theaters and I was a basketball fan at the time. I don't remember being like, that's Marquez Johnson, but I don't know. I mean, the people rebounds. I knew were like World Be Free and Buck Williams.
Rebounds aren't sexy, okay? You know, that's just the truth of the matter.
Did you watch this by yourself?
No, I did not. I did not watch this by myself. I am in the house with my lovely girlfriend, and we watched it together. And something that she loves to do in movies, that she only has a slight interest in, the thing that draws her in is finding the homosexual undertones of the movie. And she was so happy at the end when Billy and Sydney ended up together to play basketball together in Venice, and that poor so what was the
name Rosie of, Perez? But
yes,
Gloria.
So poor Gloria, who became Ken Jennings. In the like wildest Alex Trebek cameo of all time.
Yes. So Rosie Perez plays Gloria, who is Woody Harrelson's girlfriend, and she has a dream of getting onto Jeopardy. And what I would say is probably the most questionable plot element of the movie, which is that if you can get access to a security guard on the lot of where a game show shoots, that can get you in as a contestant on said game show. But I'm just like, I don't care. Somehow that security guard was like, I'm going to let you in on the lot and then you'll be on the show. They just skip over that entirely.
Yeah. Hey, but she won, and she won a bunch. And, you know, Billy, he had to gamble that money one last time.
I love the ending of this movie. I think it's so bittersweet. Sweet. It's really kind of happy and kind of sad because he does what he wants. He beat the guys. And it's sort of mildly hopeful that he might be able to get back with her, but it's really not guaranteed at all because she seemed pretty like, you know what? You're a cool guy, but I'm realizing that like, this is a pattern that's just going to keep repeating over and over.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. It felt very, it spoke to me of like the obsessions that men get that in the moment, they just can't let, they've just got to do it the one more time.
Yeah,
because this is like what makes them feel like they're a dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, just ride this one out. And what I love about this ending was that she gave him the speech for making the choice to participate as opposed to the result of what happened. Yeah. I think that's a fascinating and not that common choice in screenwriting.
Because people will often write a movie where it's like, hey, I forgive you for that. You know, like it ended up all right. And it's, I think, is this the first trust the process movie? You know, like this, I mean, it was all about the process and he didn't change the process. So she had to move on to a different thing.
Yep. She did not like what the process was doing.
No. I also thought the mob part of the movie was a little goofy. Those mob guys were incredibly goofy.
Yeah, that was goofy. I kind of forgot about that part, and all I remembered when they showed up, I was like, oh, right, these are the guys who end up taking a photograph of him at the end.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, we're buddies, yeah. Just, like, don't screw us over again, and you'll be fine.
One line that has stuck to me with me from this movie ever since I saw it, and I didn't realize until rewatching it that it's from this movie, is when Wesley Snipes' girlfriend, who's named Rhonda Dean. Her character's named Rhonda Dean. She's played by Tyra Farrell. She's like having a discussion with Rosie Perez about the hustle that these guys do and how she can't give the money back that has been, you know, hustled away. And she says something like, I don't know if you noticed, but, you know, we're in the Vista View and there ain't no Vista and there damn sure ain't no view and there is no Vista of no view or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that has stuck with me. And I, if you had asked me a week ago what that was from, I would have said it was from Karate Kid. I feel like Karate Kid, they're staying in apartments like just around the corner from where they all live in this movie.
That makes total sense.
I think this movie held up really well.
Yeah.
Based on my previous memory of it, like I'd say there's not that many movies from the 90s that you can watch that don't have cringe moments in them.
Yeah.
And this has a couple, but like not really.
Yeah.
I feel like it is still a very it's the guy's story and the women are, you know, to the side of that. However, they do get some voice and agency in this. And I actually feel that I really like the agency of her last choice
at the very end.
And that has really always, that has made this movie stick with me, I think, longer. The open-ended nature of her decision at the end has kept this movie in my mind longer than, Ron Shelton, who has, directed some incredible sports movies. It might be because I like basketball more, but I think about this movie more than Bull Durham, for example.
Yeah.
Which, have you seen that?
I have not seen Bull Durham.
Bull Durham is very good. And also Tin Cup is very good.
Oh.
That's a...
feel like I that's made a, golf a tin movie. Cup. There were like there was a tin cup limited edition DVD at the swap meet when I was a kid that this guy had for I don't know God knows like 3 years and he never sold it. He never sold the tin cup special edition DVD.
We have the cat. The cat is literally marking its territory on the microphone.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, he knows. he knows that it is time for dinner.
I will say that if you want a good sports trilogy, Bull Durham, White Man Can't Jump, Tin Cup. That's an incredible sports trilogy from one director. Those movies are all very good.
Wow. I'm trying to think.
Tin Cup's got that hustle element as well.
What would be the bad version of that? Because Bull Durham is a baseball one, right?
Yes. So you got baseball, so, basketball, golf.
Baseball, basketball, golf. A bad one would be like...
like Mighty Ducks.
Well, no. Like a bat. What's the worst baseball movie?
Ooh. I don't... Let me think about that, because actually baseball is very amenable to good movies.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of good baseball movies.
There's a lot of good baseball movies.
Thinking for basketball.
Maybe Angels in the Outfield?
I mean, is that bad? Here's the thing. Angels in the Outfield is so good.
I haven't seen
it. It's such a good, cute little movie.
Yeah.
And it's Disney. They're perfect at doing that kind of movie. Right. It's not like the best movie ever. The spinoffs like Angels in the End Zone or whatever the other ones they had afterwards were terrible. But like, you know, all those first Disney movies are good. Like Mighty Ducks is good. Air Bud is good. They're just good.
Okay, I got a list of 10 worst baseball movies.
Okay.
I wouldn't really count this. Major League, Back to the Minors.
No, I'm not counting anyone that's like a sequel to a good one.
Okay, I remember seeing this movie. This came out the same year as White Man Can't Jump, but The Babe. With John Goodman.
I don't remember being very good. I can imagine that being pretty bad.
There's something called The Scout, and then Rookie of the Year. These are all the 90s.
Yeah, and Rookie of the Year isn't even like that bad. Rookie of the Year, it's the kid. It gets the arm surgery, and you know, it's just like a decent kid's baseball movie.
I think it might be that it might be something about the way that baseball is structured I wouldn't be surprised if the way certain sports are structured lend themselves to be better narratively than other sports.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there is something about baseball that has sort of like a forced... Most baseball games have to end with... They can't just run out of time, you know?
Yeah.
So like... You have to end a baseball game. You have to get the last out. There's like a built-in drama to how it concludes.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Basketball.
That covers all the bases.
It covers all the bases. Basketball, and then for golf, it's a tie between Bagger Vance and Happy Gilmore.
Bagger Vance is an interesting one because the book is kind of interesting, I read.
Yeah.
And also... I only read it after realizing or being told that it's the story of the Bhagavad Gita, which is why his name is Bagger Vance.
Okay.
So that made it more interesting to me. And also the guy who wrote the book, Bagger Vance, has a very, very well-regarded book called The War of Art that I would recommend to anybody about being an artist. That's kind of fascinating. But the movie itself... is that kind of the quintessential magical black person movie that comes to you and makes everything okay. What was the third sport? Baseball. Baseball covers the first two.
Yeah, basketball covers them both. Yeah. So
how would you compare White Man Can't Jump to The Way Back?
The Way Back is not funny. It's not a funny movie. Uh-huh. I didn't laugh at all in The Way Back because there's nothing funny about it. It's not a fun movie. Uh-huh. White Man Can't Jump is endlessly funny. It is a movie where they're trying to be funny and they are funny. The Way Back is nominally a basketball movie. The Way Back is a movie about addiction, loss, and grief in a way that they didn't really advertise, you know, they advertised it like, hey, it's a basketball movie. Like, it's not a basketball movie. The Way Back is a movie about addiction, loss, and grief in a way that hit me really hard because it's a very good movie.
And basketball is just sort of like the medium that the guy works in or whatever, or it's some sort part of the storytelling, but it's not like Hoosiers where
no, not at all.
I guess it's a basketball movie in the way that Teen Wolf is a basketball movie.
Yeah. And that, because Teen Wolf, he's, you know, it's a movie about addiction, loss, and grief. Exactly. Yeah, he was addicted to being a wolf. He lost being a human, and he's grieving the fact that he's a wolf now.
Yeah. What movie should we watch this week?
Okay. All right. What should we watch this week?
Do you know what the starters are doing so we don't pick the same one?
Yeah. They're doing Uncut Gems.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Is that a basketball movie?
No. I mean, well, yes, sort of.
Oh, I didn't know that. I haven't seen it.
Did you see it? Oh, my fucking God. Dude, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, it is a it is not a basketball movie, but basketball is a huge part of that movie. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let me see.
I will say that on the Esquire list of the best basketball movies ever made, White Man Can Jump is number one.
Nice. Well, we started off in a good place.
I'm actually surprised that I would think something like Hoosiers would be number one, but.
Do you want to watch High Flying Bird?
I think I've seen this. I would rewatch it, actually. This is the Soderbergh Netflix movie about.
It's the Soderbergh Netflix
one. Yes, let's rewatch that because I didn't give it a full shot the last time.
Cool. All right. Then
High Flying Bird, this is on Netflix, right?
Yes, it is. It's a Netflix movie shot on Steven Soderbergh's iPhone.
Yes. And this is very much about modern NBA. And like, if you're interested in the business side of the NBA, this is the movie for you.
Yeah.
I believe this has some cameos from the Big Cat himself.
Ooh, I love it.
I believe Karl Anthony Towns is in this, if I remember
correctly. We'll also have to watch Cue Ball, was the Netflix documentary about the San Quentin State Prison Basketball League.
Ooh.
Kevin Durant's in it.
Have you seen Hoop Dreams?
I have seen Hoop Dreams.
Okay, we should maybe.
I have Hoop Dreams. I think I have Hoop Dreams on Laserdisc. I got it for a buddy of mine so he could hang it in his house.
Now, I remember that Hoop Dreams is very long. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
But I've seen Hoop Dreams probably
three times. Yeah, it's very, very long.
But you get to see a young high school age Chris Webber in that.
Ah.
Yeah, you actually see Chris Webber and Jalen Rose like sitting next to each other at a AAU or something.
That's fun.
Before they realized that they would eventually not speak to each other at all.
Yeah, yikes. Semi-pro? Have you seen Semi-pro?
I've not seen Semi-pro. In fact, I don't think I've seen any of that genre of Will Ferrell sports movie.
We should watch Semi-pro. Okay. That'd be a good one.
Wanted to watch Love and Basketball.
Love and Basketball is absolutely one we should watch.
I completely forgot about this movie, Blue Chips.
Blue Chips. Yeah. We should watch Blue Chips. Women of Troy is a good one.
Oh, I don't know that
one. Did you, it's the documentary about, the USC basketball team that, was the first USC women's basketball team to win the national championship. It's a HBO documentary, but
you know what? I will, as a service to you and to the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to find a copy of Amazing Grace and Chuck.
Ooh.
Because I almost guarantee that it won't be streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
Let me just see. And that's the one with what's his name? Alex. Oh no, I'm sorry. I think I said it was George Gervin. It's Alex English.
Got it.
From the Denver Nuggets back in the day. Playing a basketball player. I will find that and make it available to our listeners in some quasi-legal way.
Love it.
But this week the movie is what did we decide on? Oh,
we decided the movie was High Flying Bird.
Watch it on Netflix.
That's right.
I'm assuming everybody listening to this has Netflix. If you don't, I will give you my password, but I can't believe you don't have it at this point. Especially at this point in the crisis.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thanks for chatting with me. I mean, you know, we're just stuck in our houses.
Yeah. Oh, also congratulations to Marcus Smart, who has recovered from COVID-19.
So has Rudy Gobert. So has Donovan Mitchell.
There you go. Congratulations.
I guess, yeah, the other like public list of people who got it, James Dolan got it. That was a thing on my text thread.
Yes.
But
all the best people are getting it.
All the best people, baby.
The rest of us are staying inside, as you should as well. Watch High Flying Bird, and we'll be back. Casey, do you have any comedy shows this week?
You know, actually, do I have one tomorrow night? I don't know if we said yes or not to doing a Zoom show tomorrow, okay. But I don't know.
You know what? Maybe. We'll let your group do the one to sort out their technical issues.
Yeah,
because I had technical issues just trying to do a Jackbox game the other night.
You know what? I've been doing Jackbox games, and they are running real slow over the internet because everybody's doing it.
I did a Jackbox game Friday night with a couple of friends, and the Jackbox servers nationwide went down. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Actually, I'm looking for now, is there something else I can do in a Zoom meeting like that that doesn't require a server of some kind?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Alrighty. I think that's it for this week.
All right.
We'll see you next week on the Real Threes Podcast. Have a great week.
Later.